Welcome to The Scrub Life, a podcast for and about the incredible profession of surgical technology. I'm Chris Blevins, and our mission at The Scrub Life is to educate the public about surgical technology. Each episode dives into the wonderful world of surgery, where we inform and hopefully entertain our listeners while interviewing amazing individuals within the field and presenting the hot topics everyone wants to know more about. We've now partnered with the Association of Surgical Technologists to help us expand our conversations, bolster our engagement, and bring further awareness to the surgical technology profession. CSTs are an integral part of the sterile team that cares for patients in the operating room. Learn more about this exciting field, the immense effort that goes into educating future CSTs, and how you too can become a ninja of the OR. Now, without further ado, here's the latest episode of the Scrub Life Podcast. So, hi, everyone. I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Scrub Life. We are now in partnership with the Association of Surgical Technologists, and I am so grateful for that opportunity. I hope that it brings more people to listen to our podcast and then learn about the amazing profession of surgical technology. And you are going to fall in love with pediatrics the way that I have, just simply by listening to Tim and Anna. And the way that he is just so passionate about what he does. So without further ado, let's introduce Tim Danico. Tim, hi, friend.
Hi. Thank
you so much for doing this with me.
It is an honor to be with you tonight, Chris.
Oh, man. I am so grateful. We're going to get into, you know, pediatrics and where you work now. But one of my very favorite things to hear about when I talk to people on this podcast is how in the heck did they get into surgical technology in the first place? So tell me, like, how in the world did you find this field?
So I really almost, for lack of a better way to put it, stumbled upon becoming a surgical technologist. I was just scrolling through our college catalog, and it was one of the couple programs that just highlighted my interest. And so I went to the information session and I sort of got hooked. And that was that made surgical technology the clear winner for me.
Oh, man, that's awesome. What about that in the catalog drew you to it? Was it patient care or was it the operating room in general?
It was the operating room, because that was something that I had never seen, because before I started in the OR, my background was EMS. So I saw everything leading up to it.
Very cool that you get to finally see like what happens after you guys, you know, EMS is so incredibly important in our field because it's everything that is done from the ground into our operating room that even allows us the slight chance to be able to fix whatever's going on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
I always think that it's really confusing because one of the, you know, there's so many benefits to what we do as CSTs, but one of the things that I think is maybe a bummer, if you will, is the fact that mm-hmm. we don't typically get to see what happens to our patient after we have taken care of them in the operating room. We don't get to see the after effects or what their life is like once they're off our table. But at the same time, I think we also don't get to see the incredible life-saving measures that happen before they get on our table. So I don't know. I think our field of vision is really, we definitely have blinders on, don't you think?
I would very much agree, but I think peds to me is the one big caveat to that.
Yeah?
Because a lot of the patients that I see are frequent flyers and they have unfortunately have to have multiple surgeries, but it's gotten to the point with a lot of the kids that I see in my OR mm-hmm. that you see them get progressively better and better to the point where you don't have to see them again.
Oh my goodness. So I would think that definitely breeds into the fact that you are so passionate about it. Mm-hmm.
What brought you into pediatric surgery? You know, you went through the grueling task of school, becoming a CST, and then like what brought you into finding pediatrics as your passion?
So finding peds as my passion truly happened by chance, because at the hospital that I work at, we were getting ready to open a brand new children's hospital that was state of the art. And I just took a shot.
Yeah.
And I ended up loving it from day one.
Don't you think that doors like that happen? They just kind of open when they're supposed to. And I think sometimes we just have to be willing enough to listen or to see all of the fireworks that are happening and not get scared. I know that you're heavily involved in the Iowa AST State Assembly.
Yep.
Give me some of your professional background.
So I have been a certified surgical technologist since 2013, but the market at that time in Iowa for jobs was a little meh. It took me a little bit to get going in my scrubbing career. So I took a CSS position just as a foot in the door to the facility I'm currently at. I found my opening for the children's hospital. I jumped at the chance to finally be able to use my schooling.
Wonderful. So you're currently at the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital. Is that correct?
Correct.
How long have you been there?
I have been there since day one. Our first day of surgery in the new hospital was April 27th of 2017.
A day that will live in infamy.
Right. I will have to send you the picture that I found of the OR in the very first case we did.
Please do. And we will share it with our listeners on our webpage as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what was your journey like getting involved with AST and kind of our professional organization? How did you find your way into that path?
So a good friend of mine that I have known ever since we started the surgical tech program,
he
kind of got involved before me, and he kept pushing me to get involved and like, hey man, this is a lot of fun. This is a lot of fun. You're not going to regret doing it. And finally, I just bit the bullet and did it. And I don't regret the impact that we're making in the state of Iowa, and hopefully maybe one day nationwide.
That was my next question, was like, he said you weren't going to regret it. Do you? That was a big one. And so it's
no.
It's nice to hear that you don't. I'm going to brag about you for a little bit, because I have friends in many places across this country. And one of them, who is just near and dear to my heart, bragged about you so much. So if your ears were burning, it's totally because we were definitely talking about you behind your back. But it was such a great thing. The topic that came up most was, number one, your passion for what you do and for our profession. But also number two was that you have these incredible relationships with the surgeons that you work so closely with.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that speaks not just to your character, but also to the way that you operate in the operating room. And I just finished an episode recording that will come out here in a few weeks. We've talked about the critical importance of the relationship between the team that's operating on the patient. What's your viewpoint on that?
So my take on teamwork, especially teamwork in the OR, is you just have to be approachable.
Yeah.
And being approachable is, to me, is always been the key to make the OR as low stress as possible, if there is such a thing as a low stress OR.
On a good day, maybe.
Yeah, definitely on a good day.
What is your take on communication? It's another thing that I always ask people. We're in a culture of see something, say something, but developing that skill in the operating room, in these high pressure situations where you can feel like there's some hierarchy, right? Like there's a surgeon and there's a nurse. And
definitely.
How did you find your voice in the operating room?
I'd say finding my OR voice.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was my biggest struggle in adjusting to the OR. Finally, it's just, I got that comfort level and I got that rapport with my surgeons and I got that rapport with all of my fellow nursing staff, that I finally just felt like I could let the walls down. And if I truly did see something wrong, I would speak up. Preceptees that I have, whether it be students or new hires, your aura advice will come with time. Do not push it. Do not force it.
I also think, though, as an educator, like, we are probably the antithesis of that, because we are constantly saying, like, you find it right now. Like, you figure it out. Because if you see something, like, you have to say something immediate. That kind of bullish approach is important, because we need to stress to them the importance of being the expert on sterility in the room. At the same time, if that's not like your normal vernacular, like if that's not your, if you're not normally a very extroverted person, it takes a lot of courage to be able
absolutely,
to
say
something in these high stress environments. So I love that approach. The inner educator in me is like, no, say it right now, like from the very beginning. So maybe that's why my students shake a little bit.
Yeah.
University of Iowa, the Stead Family Children's Hospital, it has a kind of a national reputation, if you will. And I experienced it firsthand. And so not that I want to be the guest on this episode, but I just wanted to, talk about my 19-year-old son. When he was in his senior year, he thought he was going to join the Air Force Academy. He was also a quarterback for his football team. One of the things he kind of talked me into as a mom was going and watching the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs football game. So we're totally freezing. Mind you, I'm a Texan at heart. So if it gets below like 50, I'm dying. And so it's definitely that. But we are sitting in this football stadium and we're watching them, and they are playing the University of Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah.
And so on the screen during halftime, the topic came up where they showed the University of Iowa, the Children's Hospital, and they showed fans and this momentous, like, fan-driven pause, if you will, in the football game for the benefit of the children in that hospital. I was crying, frozen tears, because it was done. But I was crying because I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. But will you tell them what it is that I'm talking about? And have you ever witnessed it firsthand?
So I have witnessed it firsthand. So what Chris is talking about is known as the Iowa Wave. And so after the first quarter of every home football game at Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City, everybody in the stadium will turn around and will just wave to all the kids in the children's hospital. Oh. So every Saturday, at least pre-COVID, there would be a giant party up on the 12th floor, which is the top floor of our hospital. And they have what's called a press box where they host all of these parties. And it's just full of games and snacks and just a way for the kids to essentially let loose and be normal for a little bit.
What is the viewpoint from the 12th floor when you're looking at the stadium and you're seeing, I saw photos where people would light up their phones. I've seen cigarette lighters, you know, on a night game. It literally looks just like fireworks almost in the stands.
Absolutely. I haven't seen it from the hospital looking down. I've only seen it from the stadium looking in, but it's just essentially will just bring tears to your eyes because you have hundreds and hundreds of children in that hospital fighting Lord knows what kind of battle. And it's just something as simple as waving hi and we're thinking about you.
I can't do it on a podcast. Don't tell them that I'm like tearing up while we're recording this. But I think anytime you can bring humanity into that such a sterile environment as the hospital and just make them feel connection. Oh my God. Like, how do you not cry? How do you not get emotional about?
And I think that's what's made the Iowa Wave so popular nationwide.
Absolutely. I think maybe it just brings a sense of humanity to what we do in the OR, because we can really get so hyper-focused on the actual procedure that we're doing. And I almost think it's a defense mechanism, right? Like sometimes you just have to turn off the fact that there are other factors involved in the patient that you're caring for, because you have to be so incredibly focused or you'll make a mistake.
And absolutely. Peds is the one area where any mistake in the OR could potentially be catastrophic for that patient.
In fact, that's a great kind of segue, because you and I spoke earlier and one of the things that I asked was like, what is the one point that you would really like to be kind of pounded in in this episode, and you said the stereotype that pediatric surgery is just surgery on an adult, just with smaller instruments.
Exactly.
And why is that wrong?
So I do not remember for the life of me where I read this, but I read it and it's stuck with me ever since. But the stereotype is pediatric surgery is not just surgery in miniature form. It's surgery on a person, and you treat that person, regardless of age, the exact same way every time.
Children, especially our young children, neonates, you know, that kind of age group,
mm-hmm.
don't have the same mechanisms for healing or for temperature control.
Well, absolutely not.
Pain control, like they don't have the same immune system that we have as adults. And so all of those factors, I would imagine, come into play when you're operating on them.
Oh, definitely. The biggest thing about peds, especially on a neonate, is temperature. So it's quite common, especially for a baby that's like under a week old. We'll crank that room up to 80 degrees.
I would die. Does that take some getting used to? You had to have done clinical assignments all over the place to include adult patients. So
yeah.
What was that like the first time?
I really don't think there's a way to get used to that heat unless you're constantly in it. And even though I'm constantly in a warm OR, I'm still not used to it because I'm a bigger guy and I always run hot. And so a hot-blooded person in a hot OR just doesn't mix very well, but I still love it.
And then add lead on top of that if you're having to do x-ray.
Oh, Lord, yes.
You're drowning your own sweat. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. So what's the youngest patient you've ever operated on?
The youngest patient that I've ever had was 20 minutes old.
20 minutes?
Yeah.
Was it a cardiac surgery? I would imagine that it's some congenital something or other.
It was congenital, but it was baby just had so much wrong with it that the baby unfortunately wasn't compatible with life. Yeah. I still remember it to this day. It was about 2 weeks after we had opened the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I get called in at like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning for a baby that was just born that we can't intubate. And so I rush in as quick as I can. I get to the hospital about 4:15, and by about 4:45, the parents are brought to the OR to say goodbye.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Do they bring the patient's parents into the operating room often, or is it more often that we transfer to ICU?
I would say it would be more often that we transfer to ICU, but especially in like the pre-COVID days, as just like a coping or a calming mechanism, we would commonly bring parents back to the OR as kids would go to sleep.
So I'm a trauma scrub by nature, and I did transplant surgery and then cardiovascular stuff. I think those moments where we did have patients' families, like if we had a cardiac or organ donation, those moments for me, it was hard to transition from like human Chris witnessing a family's last goodbye, right?
Mm-hmm.
To then OR Chris, like I need to super focus on what we're doing because we need these organs to go to the people in order to honor this last gift as well as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal emotionally with things like that? I'm a mom. So like pediatrics is always something that I kind of veered away from. I was super scared that I would be a really horrible mom because of the things that I saw in the OR. So like I would just lock my kids in a closet for 18 years because I was scared to death of something happening. So I think that there's something in pediatric surgical techs and the rest of the team that allow you to cope with those things. I would love for you to share that because it's definitely something I would love to learn.
So to be brutally honest, I'm still finding my coping mechanisms as well.
Yeah.
But especially in the moment, I've always been one to just kind of bottle it up and then just vent to somebody after the fact. And that somebody, honestly, has always been my assistant nurse manager.
Do you want to do a shout out to her? Tell her.
Oh, absolutely. Her name's Rachel Gochner. And I've told her this multiple times, but she is truly an amazing supervisor.
There is something about a mentor. And I think we should give recognition to those people as often as we can. Because there's a difference, right? Between being a mentor and being a boss.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough to have those people in your life that are mentors, that are people that you can truly be yourself with and you know, support you, we should literally throw a parade for those people, because unfortunately they're few and far between.
Oh, very much so, especially in today's crazy world.
Well, thank you, Rachel, because I adore Tim. And so if you are one of Tim's people, then you're one of mine now. So I'm grateful for that. What's the oldest patient you've cared for in the operating room?
So generally, peds will run the full gamut of 0 to 18. But we do have several patients that are followed by several different services for congenital lifelong issues. And the oldest patient that I've had in the OR is 45.
40? Really? That was not something I thought you were going to say. I was thinking like 20s. 45?
Yeah.
How many just dozens of surgeries have you been a part of? Like, you definitely probably have developed a relationship, or maybe not personal relationship, but you're invested at this point, right?
Oh, definitely. I would say so. Yeah.
The surgeon's got to be invested too. It's hard to cut that cord, I think, when you've been a part of their you know, growth for that long.
I would say so, true.
Okay, speaking of investment and really like being committed to your service, you had one heck of an opportunity. So when they built the new children's hospital, they really, really got employee buy-in. And one of the ways they did that was that you were able to basically create your OR.
Yeah. So not very many people get to say that, but
no, I'm so jealous. How, like, I want you to start me from ground zero. Like, they come to you and they're like, hey, we're building this new hospital, you know, ward. You have all of these operating rooms. We want you to be a part of this. Was it a blank slate? Because for me, when somebody says you can have whatever you want, like, my mind immediately goes blank. Like, I need to know. What did that look like? Were you shocked? Were you excited? Did you have a clue what you were getting into?
I definitely had a little bit of shock and a little bit of, I have a dumbfounded look on my face. Like, what do you want us to do?
I can do what?
We didn't have complete and total say of it, but we made recommendations, and those recommendations were always top of the list, because we're at the end going to be the users of what's being constructed.
You literally got to choose the wall paint for your OR.
Yeah.
Why did you choose?
Our hospital has 8 ORs. Uh-huh. And so we have 2 ORs painted in the same color. So 1 and 2 are painted yellow. 3 and 4 are like a tealish green. Mm-hmm. 5 and 6 is a bright blue. And 7 and 8 are a darker blue.
Cheerful, not the whole like morgue colors that we see in our older ones.
When like the patient's sitting up, going to sleep, they're looking right at that colored wall. Our computers are linked with all of our monitors connected to the boom. Mm-hmm. So we'll play YouTube videos, music videos. There was one patient, I remember we were having a dance party in the OR.
Yes. That is awesome. Years ago, I had a hysterectomy. As I wheeled into the OR, and they were playing NSYNC, bye, bye, bye. Yeah, that song for that my is uterus.
Great.
I think that helps relax your patient. And, you know, as we learn, especially in pediatrics, that separation anxiety is a big one, not just for the mamas and the daddies who are being separated from their kids, but for the kiddos too. And I don't know.
Oh, definitely. I would say more for the kids than the parents. This is the worst day of their life, regardless of if it's a good surgery or a bad surgery.
Do you let them bring a stuffed animal or a favorite blanket, or, you know, do you see a lot of that coming in as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. Lots of blankets, lots of stuffed animals. I've had some bring Legos and Tonka trucks in the OR. Or some of our younger kids will even just get brought back in a wagon.
I want to be brought back in a wagon next surgery. We talk a lot on the education side about being able to flush. And it doesn't matter if you were having a bad day. It doesn't matter if you had a flat tire going into work, or our personal life is a hot mess. When you walk into that operating room, none of that matters anymore. I would think, though, that also there is maybe just a bigger stress on that, because your patient's already scared and they're nervous and they're having that separation anxiety. And, you know, I think you probably have to be hyper aware, right? Like the noises that you're making while you're setting up.
Oh, definitely. It's I try to get as much of my setup done as I can before the kiddos come back to the OR, because that clanging around of instruments or me trying to get my count out of the way before the kid comes in, that's all just going to be extra distractions for them.
Right. How do you handle, but like, how do you handle a bad day when you know you have a shift coming up and that's not something that you can even show?
My big thing is I just don't let the bad get to me. I just let it go in one ear and out the other.
You have a pretty great team though. I would imagine that helps.
Oh, definitely. All my nurses are wonderful to work with.
So as a team, when you guys were making these decisions about your OR, but what else did you guys get to really have an impact on that you think was special?
Especially for ease of the OR, we got to have a say in a lot. So we custom built our nurse servers for what we wanted in there. We got to build our own service line specialty cart. I'd say for a normal day-to-day operations in an OR, you name it, we had at least somewhat of a say in it.
I would imagine it also helps you all run more efficiently and effectively in the operating room too.
Oh, absolutely. We're a smaller team, but we can crank through some cases like none other.
Okay, so let's get to the cases then. Talk to me about some of the things that you've been involved in the operating room.
So I've been involved in quite a bit. My two loves in the OR are oral maxillofacial surgery and ENT. Oh. So my two favorite cases happen to fall in those two specialties.
Awesome.
And my favorite by far is we will do a microtia ear reconstruction.
So that's where the ear is miniature in nature or malformed. And so that affects, and that's the external ear, right?
Yeah, most of them have been external. There's a few where it's been both internal and external.
For our listeners, like that, the external ear is created in the formation that it is. It's because form follows function, and that draws all of those sound waves into our ear, right?
Yep.
So this is life-changing for these patients. What all is involved?
Microtia repairs are... It's a very lengthy surgery. The first one I scrubbed ended up being almost 19 hours start to finish.
That's crazy.
But it's, if you kind of run your fingers along the top of where your ear normally would be, that's kind of where we would make our incision. Okay. And then we would shave about half the head and we would make another incision about midway up. And then, well, you would do probably almost 3 hours of nothing but cautery to get the skin up and off of that fascia.
Yeah.
And we would just make a giant temporal parietal fascia flap to cover that where that new ear is going to be.
Wow.
Yeah.
All those vessels. And we all know it's OR people. The scalp will bleed if you just look at it wrong. Like it's so vascular.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, so what is your patient like? Can you see a big difference when they're still on the table, or do they come back for subsequent surgeries? What's been your experience?
So a lot of the kiddos that I've seen with this, they really haven't had to come back for multiple surgeries, which is always a good thing. But at the end of the case, it's almost like instant gratification, because once he gets everything ready and he gets the inner workings of what's going to be your external ear done, he'll lower that fascia flap over the ear and he'll turn suction way down to like 50 and he'll suck all the air out.
I'm trying to wrap my head around it. It's like deflating a balloon, but so precisely that the wrinkles match the exact way that you want it to.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be a perfect ear, but you've got nothing. You've got something where nothing was before. And to me, that's always been a highlight of those cases.
Did you all ever have to have additional grafting or silastic material to also embed in that skin flap? Or has it always been just autograft in the patient's own tissue as a part of it?
So the surgeon that I worked with the most for doing these, he uses what's called MedPore. Mm-hmm. So it's just a porous material that eventually just becomes one with the patient.
I think someone described it to me once as like a honeycomb. So it's almost like just a bridge work. The patient's own tissue grew over. Is that kind of...
I haven't heard it explained that way, but that would be a perfect explanation for it.
That's how it works. Well, so that is a really cool surgery. What else?
So my other favorite in the OR is we will do what's called mandibular distraction osteogenesis.
My goodness. So explain that for people who maybe have never done that before. What in the heck are you talking about?
Okay. So what mandibular distraction osteogenesis is these quite commonly young neonatal babies will have a super, super recessed airway. So if you just bring your lower teeth back, that is their normal standard position. And that makes it sometimes next to impossible to intubate them. And so if you kind of run your fingers along your natural jawline, and so we'll kind of make two incisions kind of midway on each side, and we'll dissect down through the tissue. We'll stimulate just to make sure we're not getting anything that we shouldn't be.
Facial nerve is a big deal, right?
Facial nerves, and we'll tie out, we commonly tie out vessels as well. And then once we get down to the bone, we will break it. Once it's broken, we have these plates that are custom molded to that patient, that you'll have one part or one panel of each plate go on either side of that cut. And so they'll have hardware sticking out of them, so they'll kind of look like Frankenstein for a while.
Yeah.
And so that little piece of metal that's sticking out of them, so they'll be supplied with a screwdriver from us, where you'll turn that little rod a little bit each day. Wow. And so as that plate opens up, bone will grow in its place. The best thing about these is, especially with our younger babies, a lot of times they'll end up going intubated to the ICU afterwards, and they'll stay intubated usually for about a week.
Oh, goodness.
And so the surgeons will make their daily rounds on them, and they'll quite commonly do the turning for them.
That's a long time to be intubated, especially for a baby. And so you're talking, like, how old are these children? Like, in the severe cases where their airway is obstructed, I mean, you have to get in there pretty quickly, right?
So the two most severe that I have done, one was 9 days old, and these surgeries take about a week to plan.
Yeah.
And the other one was 3 months old.
And then, so are there follow-up procedures, like as they grow, once you get the bone and the jaw, you know, the mandible in the appropriate position, do you guys go back in and like permanently plate and screw?
Nope. So how this works out is the full, what they call distraction period is usually 2 weeks. And so after that point, the plates will stay on usually for 3 to 4 months, and then the plates will come off and nothing is put in its place. They see a need to do it.
All that new bone growth should have taken over.
Yep. How? And so they're checking to make sure that they have proper bone growth and it's nice and solid.
So do you get to typically do like the before and after procedures on your
patient? I quite commonly get to do both sides of it. Yeah.
Oh, how satisfying is that? Because you get to actually see the end result of the work that you did before.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. What else do you think pediatrics, like what do you think is think a benefit of being a pediatric CST as opposed to those of us who just work on the old adult? What's another example of a difference in your experience so far?
The biggest reason I love being a pediatric CST is, honestly, the benefits that we make for our patients are just truly long-lasting and in most cases, lifelong.
Love that.
And that's always been my biggest love for peds.
So any final words as we kind of wrap up this hour? I think when you're having an amazing time, time flies, right?
Oh, truly.
I can't believe it's already been this long, but any lasting or final thoughts that you would like to give to our audience about a day in the life of Tim Danico as a pediatric
senior? Kind of my final thoughts, especially for those of you that do get to be in a peds room, is pay attention to that anesthesia monitor. Mm. Kids do not have near as much reserve in their lungs as adults do. So your O2 stats can drop like a rock and drop quick.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. I think that awareness of your environment and having the forethought to be able to anticipate what your surgeon might need next is pretty cool. you said you do a lot of ENT and OMF and that kind of thing, but in your circumstances, you know, that can turn serious really fast because babies can be so unstable, right?
Absolutely.
So you have to be ready for pretty much anything.
Yep. And a lot of times with peds is we see babies almost daily where they're too unstable to have surgery in the OR and we have to go to them.
I hadn't even thought about what is trying to create a sterile field like in those environments. I would think you'd have to take control pretty quickly, right? To make sure that it's not contaminated.
Yep. When we have to do our off-floor cases, that is when your OR voice will pay off leaps and bounds.
Absolutely. What's the most common procedure you have to do on the floor?
So quite commonly, our cardiac team will do chest closures on the unit, or it's general surgery with doing open bellies on NICU babies. And those are kind of the two biggest ones that I see.
Finding your OR voice, being passionate about what you do, and having that massive awareness of what is happening to your patient outside of your just operative field. Those are key, right?
Very key, especially for anything Pete's.
And then, of course, being able to have a rock and dance party when they get rolled into your OR.
You
have to have your dance moves down, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Tim, thank you so much. You've opened my eyes, and not just today, but in conversations that we've had in the past. And I hope that you do the same for those that are listening tonight. But I really am grateful for you sharing your time with me and these stories as well.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Scrub Life podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and share. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at the Scrub Life podcast. Show notes for this episode, as well as past episodes, our contact information, and the virtual suggestion box can be found at our webpage, thescrublifepodcast.com. This has been Chris Blevins and Stephanie Austin with the Scrub Life Podcast. Until next time, be safe, support each other, and stay sterile.